Hi, I'm Michael Causey, Editor-in-Chief of Clinical Researcher. Welcome to this Association of Clinical Research Professionals podcast, Clinical Research Challenges Today and Tomorrow. I think most of us would agree the clinical trial industry is evolving more quickly than ever before. Whether it's how to handle a deluge of data from wearables, remote-based monitoring, or any number of new challenges, the workforce faces obstacles and opportunities we couldn't have even imagined 10 years ago. So, what's a clinical trial practitioner to make of all this? What is expected of you today? More importantly, how will you thrive in the workplace of tomorrow? In this podcast, you'll hear from three experts: Ken Getz, the director and associate professor at Tufts University; David Volcano, a VP and responsible executive for clinical research at HCA; and Jim Kremidis, executive director of the Association of Clinical Research Professionals. Each talks about many of the same issues, but from their own unique perspective. In part one, you'll hear Ken Getz talk about today's landscape. In part two, David Volcano gazes into the crystal ball to help us identify important new trends. Finally, Jim Kremidis tells us that it's time to advance the professionalization of the clinical trial workforce. He makes the case that competencies should be measured and assessed by a reputable organization with the credibility to make such pronouncements. We hope you'll enjoy these discussions. We're here with Ken Getz, Director of Sponsored Research Programs and Research Associate Professor with the Tufts Center for the Study of Drug Development. Ken, thanks so much for joining us on the ACRP podcast series.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about a bit of a preview for the session you're going to do for us at the conference on April 30th, kind of a state of the industry. And you have such a unique perspective and so much historical background that I'd love to hear a little bit of your thoughts about the landscape of today in the clinical trial industry, especially for the CRA, CRC workforce. Where are we right now? What's a snapshot?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I always look forward to an opportunity to participate at the ACRP annual meeting. Of course, there's the usual cast of trends. I think the most notable are the volume of activity. We're a remarkably productive and active enterprise, and that places huge demands on study monitors and study coordinators, just the volume of clinical research activity that's conducted globally. But at the same time, we face tremendous inefficiencies, very, very fragmented collaborative efforts that take a tremendous amount of effort to really manage carefully. We're operating in even more fragmented ways today. So there's a lot of work that has to go into managing all of the disparate pieces to make sure that communication runs smoothly and that at the end of the day, our study volunteers are having a safe and meaningful experience of participating in a clinical trial.
And as you noted, the industry is evolving so quickly and maybe never as quickly as it is now. And a big factor, of course, is technology. And I'm wondering if you're thinking on today's learning curve, is the workforce a little behind where the technology is? I mean, there's always some aversion to change. But where do you think we are in terms of using, you know, EDC and risk-based monitoring and remote monitoring and even going further with Apple Watch and the wearables?
I'm always amazed, Michael, at the gap between the technologies and the technology solutions that are available but that we have yet to use widely within our industry. So you always have professionals within organizations that are sort of on the leading edge, usually piloting a number of initiatives, including the use of wearable devices or some of the areas that you described. We're seeing now a lot of interest in risk-based monitoring and different technologies that really accelerate or streamline the sharing of documents, electronic trial master files, for example. These are very, very exciting areas, but in many cases, the widespread adoption is very slow, given how risk-averse we are as an industry and how entrenched many of our processes are, how difficult it is to actually change many of our operating practices and processes.
And to some degree, that risk aversion, I think, is understandable because, you know, this is literally life and death in some cases. If a trial goes wrong, if something's mismanaged, So I can personally certainly understand that wariness. But to your point, and of course I've read elsewhere that there is so much benefit to so much of this technology. Do you see that improving? I mean, do you think are educational opportunities helping with that? Do you see that landscape shifting at all?
I do, and ACRP plays a huge part in that. A couple of things, just to your point. It is true that we're a heavily regulated industry. There's a very high level of risk aversion and concern about safety of our and the protection of our study volunteers, their ethical treatment. So we always have that in the background. But there are lots of initiatives that are now getting more momentum than they used to. You know, ACRP's mantra, which includes a focus on competency and the acknowledgement that competency actually helps to drive better practices with more experienced professionals. Technology plays a part in that. The whole patient engagement movement, an acknowledgement that patient engagement should force us to move out of our comfort zone and to support our clinical trials in ways that maintains the safe and ethical treatment of our study volunteers, but also enhances their experience and their feeling of partnership with research professionals. And I think technology plays a part there as well.
Interesting, yes. And as you know, I'm sure ACRP and others have been working with the FDA to try to advance diversity in clinical trials. And I wonder if you've seen improvements in that effort and where we are today in trying to broaden the reach of clinical trials to reach minorities and even to reach women in some cases where they're very underrepresented.
This is an area where we're focusing a lot of attention, both at the Tufts Center for the Study of Drug Development, where I'm on the faculty and have a team of researchers, and also at CISGRP, where we do a lot of outreach and educational programs targeting minority communities specifically. It's an area that has mobilized so many different stakeholders in the research enterprise. I would say we're in one of those cycles where there's so much more attention being placed on this area, this need, more now than we've seen in quite some time. I can't say that I'm seeing many solutions yet that show a glimmer of improvement in access for minority communities, in more sustainable and more effective programs to raise overall clinical research literacy. We're still sort of dabbling in these areas, and I hope we'll have some real breakthroughs that we can report in the years to come.
It's certainly a challenge. It's not easy, and it's not from lack of effort. It's a difficult problem to grapple with.
I think you've said it so well, Michael. That's exactly it. It's not for lack of effort. Somehow we're not thinking about the problem fully. There's still more that we need to really think through to come up with something novel that shows a higher level of effectiveness.
Let me jump back for a second and talk about workforce. As you touched on a minute ago, as you know, ACRP and you and others, we're working to increase the professionalism, if that's the right way to say it, for the industry. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the importance of focusing more on competency, as you were saying before, how it can drive best practices, competency and skill set as opposed to just tenure.
That's such a great point. For the longest time, we've really looked at tenure as the primary criterion that we use to determine whether an individual will perform successfully and professionally and effectively. And we've learned time and time again that it's much more about broad competency. It goes beyond just knowledge of some of the basic regulatory and GCP compliance areas, and goes really to the heart of what it means to support a specific role and how it intersects and relates to so many other moving parts and so many other professionals. We're increasingly an industry made up of so many disparate pieces that are all moving in parallel and in concert. And it's that competency that is so critical to ensure our success going forward. So it's so critical that we think in a more forward-looking way. Experience alone, to a large extent, really relies on retrospective abilities, and we have to be more proactive and more prospective.
Absolutely. Well, Ken, I appreciate your time. And before I let you go, I'd appreciate if you could make some sort of final comments or, you know, some of your perceptions of, we've talked about where the industry is at, but where short term do you think it's going? As part of our session, we're talking to David Volcano about his thoughts on 3, 5, 10 years out. But I'm wondering, just to get a quick sense of where you think the industry might be going, and particularly in terms of CRAs and CRCs.
I'm often asked if I can remain hopeful given the nearly 30 years that I've spent as an outsider monitoring trends in practices and behaviors and policies. And many think that I would be rather skeptical. It's quite the opposite. I'm extremely hopeful and excited. As I said, we're in one of our most productive and most active periods. There are even more technologies that are at our disposal. We're doing some very, very innovative operating practices, and we're finding new ways to train our workforce. So I'm extremely bullish about the research enterprise moving forward, and I think a patient-centered focus, a focus on truly engaging the patient in this process and their community of care, is one of the most exciting new ways to think about our enterprise going forward. So I think the next 3 years or so, 3 to 5 years, are going to be very telling if we can truly leverage our relationship with the clinical practice and healthcare environment. That convergence of research and clinical practice represents an exciting new age for drug development.
Well, Ken, just want to thank you again. As always, your perspective and knowledge base is so valuable, and I and we at the ACRP podcast series appreciate so much you giving us your time and your thoughts.
My pleasure. I look forward to seeing everyone at the ACRP annual meeting, and really a pleasure speaking with you today.
We're here with David Volcano, AVP and Responsible Executive of Clinical Research at HCA. Hey, David, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. I'm honored to be here.
Let's talk about future trends. You've written quite a bit about this in Clinical Researcher and elsewhere. So I'm curious, in a big picture sense, to talk to you a little bit about where you see the clinical trial industry going, say, the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, 3 to 5 years is both a short and a long time. Clinical trial industry is sometimes like dog years. Every 1 year is actually 7. But that goes both ways. So, you know, if we always overestimate where we're going to be in 2 years and underestimate where we're going to be in 10, the biggest stab or trend to move towards, I would say, is try to do more integration of clinical trials in the traditional healthcare setting. I think that's probably the biggest macro trend that we'll see evolving over the next 3 to 5 years. And that is, kind of moving away from the traditional clinical trial site where you need 30 sites or so you 300 subjects. So you're going to get 30 sites to get 10 and do all this site selection to find the 30 sites and, sponsors pay $20,000, $30,000, whatever the number is, set up those sites and, hope that they get subjects in the future. I think that model is changing. We have technology that certainly pushed that and dragging along both the economics and the regulatory legs of that, too, to be more amenable to trials in more real-world settings, leveraging, electronic health records communications, leveraging telecommunications, telemedicine, and things along those lines.
And let's talk about the workforce for a second, going into those next 3 to 5 years and beyond. I mean, right now, trial practitioners are in very high demand. They're very much in the catbird seat or the driver's seat, if you will. Do you see that changing in the next several years? What kind of new demands do you think that will be on CRAs, for example?
Well, CRAs, I think, are probably the ones that will experience the greatest shift. Right now, CRAs was challenged with doing a wide variety of tasks in the monitoring. And, some of that is just very menial tasks. The verify, do source document verification. You said the lab value was at 7.3. Let's look at the medical records to see if it was 7.3. things like that, we are paying very professional people, very well-trained people, to do some of those menial tasks. I think, or I would hypothesize, that with the more and more remote monitoring, particularly of source documents, that we can be able to shift that type of verification to individuals that would be more catered to, and leave the CRAs to more professionalize that role, to have them do more judgments-based audits of systems, as opposed to just checking source documents that they match, or you wrote the two with the loop, we don't like the two with the loop, we'd like the two without the loop, or you dotted the I, but the dot isn't exactly above the I, so the scanners won't read that, or things like that. So I think there'll be a lot of removal of those menial tasks, either through remote monitoring or the direct population of CRFs from the electronic medical records, and evolve that CRA into a more professional role.
Now, you spoke a second ago about the professionalization of the CRAs and others, and as you know, ACRP is trying to help push us in that direction, in the sense of making the jobs more about tasks and competency and a little bit less about tenure. So what do you think in terms of the next couple of years, the sort of skill sets? If I'm a CRA today and I'm getting calls constantly about transferring or getting a new job, it's easy to get a little complacent, to feel like you're always going to be in demand. But that could be different in 5 years. I mean, the technologies you are talking about, I think will make the job more interesting, but it might make for fewer jobs.
Well, it'd be fewer jobs in the actual CRA market, where they're called to be professional and make judgment calls and things that professionals are trained and qualified to do. A lot of the things that they are doing that could be pushed to, I don't want to say less professional folks, but folks that can operate at a lower pay scale than a CRA, to have the technology push that to those individuals. So whether that creates a CRA that has to travel less burnout, things along those lines might be contribute to that. Yes, I agree that the issue of you have to have 2 years experience before you can come on board is something that's a trend today. Reevaluating what is the competency of that CRA. I don't think that you need 2 years experience to do source document verification. However, I would say that you would need that experience to make more professional, judgmental, systems analysis and things along those lines.
Yeah, the 2 year tenure requirement just seems rather arbitrary.
Sure, absolutely. I could have had a really crappy 2 years. It seems to be an arbitrary requirement, and that's not to say that we have arbitrary requirements everywhere else. So somewhere that came from somewhere. So that came from somewhere to say that we need a person that has a little bit more wisdom than somebody that is just there doing, say, source document verification. I hate to keep picking on SDV, but it is a big part of what we do. Making sure things were filed correctly and things like that. So. That sort of stuff is, we don't have to have a tremendous amount of wisdom for that, as we would in a CRA that's in a more professional role.
And it sounds to me like the requirements are going to become more and more technical, if you will, that the skill set will change to be more familiar with, remote-based monitoring and being able to process data from, say, Apple's research kit, things like that. What kind of training do you think the CRAs of tomorrow should be thinking about today?
Well, I think CRAs of tomorrow should understand more about the technology that's out there today. There's a lot of if we're going to change the role of a CRA to do less remote or less rote tasks of making sure boxes are filled and signatures are checked and things like that, and have them as a real overseer of the quality and the process of how the study is done at the site, they need to start learning more about technology standards and things along those lines. So, what is HL7? What is FHIR? What is CDISC, CDASH? How can FHIR integrate and work with CDISC? Those types of things are going to be a real asset to the CRAs of the future, because we're not getting back. We're not going back to paper. We're moving more electronic, and that type of oversight of the study, you know, when patients are, or subjects are electronically consented through electronic diaries and how that integrates and things like that. So that is one skill set, or at least a knowledge base that a CRA should have tomorrow that they may not be as well trained in today.
Absolutely. Well, David, on behalf of our ACRP podcast audience, I'd like to thank you for giving us your time and sharing your knowledge with us. We appreciate it very much, and look forward to hearing from you again and seeing you at the conference in April.
Great. Yeah, and I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
I'm here with Jim Kramidis, Executive Director of the Association of Clinical Research Professionals. ACRP has been active as the leader in workforce development today and beyond. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jim, we spoke earlier with Ken Getz at Tufts, and he gave us a snapshot of today and the new demands for the workforce, how they're already happening and will continue to evolve. And then we spoke the second part of this podcast about the future trends with research thought leader David Volcano. And David talked a lot about how the industry may be very different 5 years from now than it is today in terms of technology, regulation, many ways.
Yeah.
I know ACRP has been active in trying to help the workforce of today be prepared for today, but to evolve with tomorrow. So what does ACRP mean when it talks about wanting to have a workforce based on competencies rather than just tenure?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, just before I get into that, I'd like to comment on both Ken
sure.
and David's talks. It's interesting because you can see things happening today that will undoubtedly affect tomorrow. There's a lot of work going on from various groups around process improvement. Transcelerate is one that's well known. There's another organization, CITI, the Clinical Trial Transformation Initiative, coming out of Duke University and NIH. There's things that are also happening from NIH in terms of grants going to different universities, looking at ways to improve the process. And then you've got different drug companies and CROs, all these different organizations trying to improve the process of clinical trials. So set that aside for a second. At the same time, there's just a plethora of new technology coming along to help facilitate the, you know, the conduct of trials. So whether it's transferring data better ways, more efficient ways, whether it's capturing data from patients through mobile technology, I mean, the list goes on and on. So we can see the change occurring. Now, the one piece that ACRP is really trying to focus on, though, is with all those activities, with process improvements, new tools and technology to conduct trials, the question now becomes, what about the people who have to implement those things? And those are the core clinical researchers that we want to help develop and help have them evolve along with these technologies and processes.
This is a three-legged stool.
This is a three, exactly. It's a three-legged stool. And the piece that has really been missed, I would say, or omitted in terms of the discussion going on in the industry is what about the people part of this? And how do we develop people to make sure that they're ready for these processes and these tools? And that's where we would like to fit into the equation, because we agree that change needs to occur. There's no question when you look at the cost of developing a new drug, just the cost of trials in general, the time it takes and the expense it takes is astronomical. We cannot continue on that way. So we want to fill in the gap regarding how do we develop the people to make sure that they're moving along with the technology and the new processes that are coming down the pipe.
Because both Ken and David emphasize that the rate of change today is arguably the fastest it's ever been in this industry.
I would agree. I think it's on an exponential curve.
Right. Now talk about the need for the professionalization of the industry.
Right.
Standards, and again, we're getting away from tenure, we're looking at actual skill sets, but yeah. Talk a little bit about what you mean, what ACRP means about the professionalization of the industry, of
right.
the workforce.
Okay, so if you look at how people come into clinical research, it's really fascinating. I've interviewed scores of folks about, you know, what their job is, how did they enter into clinical research, and it's really interesting to listen because every story is some form of serendipity. Now, the truth is most people came through some type of a life science background, whether it be a biologist or a chemist or a doctor, nurse, other, you know, healthcare professional. But there's awful, there's also an awful lot of people that, oh, I was the receptionist in the doctor's office and all of a sudden I'm a study coordinator. Or I even heard one guy tell me he was a trucking logistics manager before he became a CRA. You know, so you bring different kinds of skill sets in. But the point is, there has been no clear path for entry into clinical research that's defined as an industry standard. And that may or may not be necessary. But what I do think is necessary is some type of a baseline level of competency that no matter what type of job you're doing, whether you're a coordinator, a CRA, a PI, a project manager, a site manager, you need to understand the fundamentals of clinical research, how it's conducted, why it's conducted, how to protect patients, how to collect data appropriately, things of that nature. And that's when we talk about the competencies, that's what we're referring to. There are competencies that have been defined by a multi-stakeholder group through the Joint Task Force. And this Harvard drove this, and it included obviously academia, there were government people there, you know, regulatory folks, there were people from industry, there were people from nonprofits like ourselves, and this group came together with these eight key competencies. So we're using that as a framework to define what are the activities that need to be understood and how, what does one need to be competent in order to conduct clinical research appropriately.
And we have a catch-22 in the industry today, where there's a shortage of professionals, and yet you have the situation where this, where there's this somewhat arbitrary 2-year requirement.
Right, for study, for CRAs.
Right, and right. So CRA, it's the, you know, it's chicken and egg. How do you get the 2 years experience to be admitted in? If it becomes about tenure and skill sets, that's easier to demonstrate. You don't have to just, it's not a matter of just flipping the pages on a calendar.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, interestingly, when you look at our data, as you know, ACRP does certification for study coordinators and as well as CRAs, as well as PIs. And when you look at the data for CRAs, for example, we see the same failure rate with a 2-year CRA as we do with a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30-year CRA.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. So the failure rate remains the same. So what it says is tenure is not the solution. I mean, experience is always going to help to some degree in terms of how somebody does a job. But there are also basic competencies, skills, attributes that an individual needs to have in order to be successful. And that has nothing to do with how many years you've been in a job.
And those skill sets and defining that, is we've been a bit fuzzy up to now on that.
The industry has been extremely fuzzy up to now.
Yeah.
I was just at a conference the other day where it was really interesting because it was primarily drug companies and the people who ran their clinical operations. And it was interesting to see the perspectives around the room because everyone agreed there is no industry standard. And what's happening is CROs, each CRO has their own way of training people. So you've got variance there. You've got variance in terms of each drug company and how they train people. And, you know, the point is there's variance literally across the industry. Now, granted, we have regulations that we all have to adhere to, but the variance in training and development concerns me, because when you look at any type of a quality initiative, one of the first things you identify is the basic trends is the more variance there tends to be, the more problems you tend to have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could set a standard methodology and, again, competency level for people who come into the industry, that would reduce the variance that we see today, and theoretically it would reduce a lot of the mistakes that are made and improve quality.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you one question before I let you go, and I appreciate your time here. Ken touched on this, as I said, David touched on this about looking forward. Mm-hmm. I think there's some agreement on the trends in terms of technology, demands in the industry, directions in terms of remote monitoring and some of those things. But what kind of advice would you give to today's workforce or people thinking about getting into this workforce for some of the demands 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What kind of skill sets do you think might be needed that either aren't here today or might need to be increased?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more involvement with technology. I think we're going to see a lot more involvement with data analytics. So what I would say to people who are in the industry today is stay up with what's happening. pay attention to the process improvement initiatives that are taking place. Listen to what they're trying to do and how they're going about it. Same with the technology. You know, learn the technology, understand the technology, the tools that are coming out, and stay educated. You know, continually take new programs to talk about, obviously, things like the new regulatory guidelines. But not just that. Don't limit it to that. Pay attention to the various, again, technologies and processes that are coming. And we'd love to help, and we will be helping our members do that. I mean, that's the idea, is we want to make sure that that information gets out to our membership so they're abreast with the industry, and as the industry evolves, they can adapt their work activities to make sure that they're still relevant and producing great research.
That's interesting, the point you raise about training and continuing their education, because in Clinical Researcher, we've written articles about how to avoid burnout. Mm-hmm. And you know, in this industry, there's a lot of travel, there's a lot of juggled responses, there's a lot of changes. It's easy to get burned out in this industry.
Yeah.
One of the keys to not burning out, to helping to prevent it, is continued education.
Yeah.
Is continuing to learn new things. It kind of regenerates, rejuvenates the person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the burnout question, I mean, part of that too is the fact that there's more work than there's capacity. The other thing that I think will change over time as we begin to introduce these competencies and sort of that, you know, that baseline level that one needs to have to conduct research is more people will come in. More people will come into the industry, and this supply and demand will level out a little bit better so that people can, you know, have a normal lifestyle and normal work activity. I also think that it's going to change, though, too, because the process improvements and the technology should alleviate some of that pressure as well.
If you know how to use it.
If you know how to use it, exactly. So those people that keep up will thrive. Those that stagnate will probably not. And you're going to see an entire new generation of clinical researchers coming into the workforce.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate this. A lot of food for thought. Some great insights here. I want to thank you again for your time, Jim.
Thank you.
We hope you found this podcast useful. If you have thoughts, questions, or ideas you'd like to see us address in an upcoming broadcast, please reach out to me at 703-253-6274. That's 703-253-6274, or email me at mcausey@acrpnet.org. That's mcausey@acrpnet.org. For the Association of Clinical Research Professionals, I'm Michael Causey. Thanks for listening.